$10.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, yesterday I was talking about how there's a tendency to blame our feelings on the world around us. So, for example, when we feel bored, we tend to think, oh, it's because I'm with somebody who's boring, or I'm watching a boring TV show, or I'm reading a boring book, or nothing's going on. And quite often, as we develop our spiritual practice, we begin to be aware of just how many times feelings arise that have absolutely nothing to do with the externals. And that very often feeling states arise because of the way we've been living our lives, or because of other things that are suppressed that we don't want to look at. Very often, for example, when we feel bored, what's going on is we've been spending our life distracting ourselves, focusing on dramas and external things that we're producing and responsibilities and rushing around to meet all the things we want to accomplish. And partially what we're doing is we're diverting our attention from old feelings that can be there of loneliness or worthlessness or sadness or rejection or not feeling good enough. And then when we get to a place in life where we have to stop, where we're no longer accomplishing anything, suddenly those feelings begin to bubble up, and we can interpret them as, oh, there's something wrong, I'm not doing anything, this is boring, this is bad, you know. And so we misinterpret that feeling as a comment on the world, when in fact it's really that we've been running away from these feelings that we've been suppressing that really need to be heard or that need to be witnessed. And so the same with being irritated with people. We can be rushing around through life carrying so much stress in the body and so much tension and adrenaline, and then someone will come by who's just simply doing their own thing, and because they're not making our life any easier, we have so much physical stress and underlying tension and feeling under the gun that we can feel, you know, why is this son of a bitch in my way? And we don't realize that the tension and the feelings have nothing to do with that person any more than the boredom has anything to do with the environment we're in. It's just there are these feelings that arise, and we then tend to blame the world on feelings that arise. I'm about to go away on a retreat in Thailand, and part of it will be a significant silent spell. And I can tell you, if you've ever been on an extended silent retreat, you're spending most of the day meditating. Nothing is happening. You're not talking to anyone. You're not making eye contact with anyone. Nothing is threatening. Nothing is going wrong. And my God, how many attitudes the mind will throw up. My God, how many feelings you'll go through. You'll be, oh my God, this is terrible. Why is this person making so much noise? Why is that person sitting there? Why is this teacher talking like that? Because the mind just creates feelings. It creates discomfort. And so we think that it's the world, but of course it's actually just what minds do. They create dissatisfaction. If you've ever been at a job where you simply thought, or you've had a point in your life where you simply thought, if I could just get rid of this one fucker, everything would be okay. I would actually like this job, like this apartment, like this class, like this whatever, if that one person wasn't there. And then they go away, just wait and see how long it takes your mind to find somebody else to blame. Another scapegoat for why we're feeling discomfort. Discomfort just arises. This is the Buddha's first noble truth. There will be discomfort. And we try to live a life where we don't have to feel any discomfort. And by doing so, we only make things worse. Because the first, the Buddha called the ignorance of the way we respond to suffering, is rather than looking into the feelings and just being with them, witnessing them, we try to change the world around us. We try to get rid of that person that's irritating us, get out of the situation that we think is boring, and we don't. And thus we become more and more ingrained towards the things that feel immediately good, that are bright and shiny and are diverting and really suck the mind up into sensual pleasure, because that keeps us unaware of the underlying stresses that are arising all the time. So part of the process of spiritual practice is, of course, turning inwards and learning how to be with these feelings as they arise without needing to change the world or to feel there's something wrong with us or to react all the time or to try to push them away, but to simply be with feelings that are crying out for our attention. Now, first, because we've often suppressed feelings of loneliness or sadness or rejection for so long, when these feelings come up, they can be so uncomfortable that we really want to act out to get rid of them. If we feel lonely, we want to be around people at all costs. If we feel worthless, then we want to spend money on something. Get me those shoes and that jacket and that whatever. We really want to we want these feelings to be gotten rid of by just giving them whatever they want. If we feel anger, we want to take it out on somebody. So we really want to act out on behalf of these feelings. We want to react because they come up so strongly. But one of the things we learn as our practice develops is that we don't need to act out on feelings, nor do we need to push them away. There's a third possibility. This is the Buddha's, third way, and that is we can simply learn to listen, to witness, to be with them, to give them space to arise, and to pass. And very often, when we're feeling anger or irritation or boredom or sadness or loneliness, if we strip away the story and just feel the feelings, we'll be surprised just how much we can sit with. We can be surprised just how many things that we thought we couldn't be with, we can actually be with. What makes feelings often so unbearable is that they don't only arise in the body and in the mind, but we add all these stories. We go back to, why am I feeling this? What's this about? Oh, it must be because of that irritating person that I'm feeling anger. And so it becomes this whole huge internal experience that's very difficult. If we put aside the stories and simply feel the energy of anger, feel the energy of sadness, notice how it affects the mind, notice how it affects the body, the breath, we can be with it. Now, occasionally, I'll use a great example of the Ajahn Brahm story about the pushing the wheelbarrow. You know the story? Did I tell the story? Ajahn Brahm was studying with Ajahn Chah, and Ajahn Chah had him, they had this huge mound that the monks had put in the corner of the monastery over a couple of years, and Ajahn Chah arrived and he said, oh, this mound is in a terrible place, I need you to move it over here. And so they all got out their wheelbarrows, and they worked day and night moving this mound from one area to the other area. And when they were all done, they were all sweating and, just tired and exhausted. And Ajahn Chah came back and he said, what did you move it over there for? I told you to move it over there. He was fucking with them. And they're like, Oh my God, it was giving them a lesson. So they had to move this huge mound, monk-made mound. Now, again, 3 more days in the hot Thailand summer, over 100 degrees, moving earth in a wheelbarrow. And at one point, Ajahn Brahm was just cursing and just, and he literally said he was cursing and like complaining aloud. And one of the senior monks came up to him and he said, "Listen, pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. It's the complaining about it that's hard." Which means it's all these stories that we add to the difficulty of life that make life impossible. But once we strip away the complaining and the storytelling and the why is this unfair, we can pretty much do anything. We can sit and experience anything. Now, that said, there are certain emotions and feelings that come up that are very, very difficult, especially anxiety, panic, fear. These can be very, very overwhelming and challenging. And so part of developing a way to be with fear and anxiety is some of the tools I'm going to talk about right now. Basically, the first tool is learning how to welcome everything. This sounds very unnatural. It seems unlikely that we would be able to welcome our fear, welcome our anxiety, especially welcome a panic attack. I have to tell you, as somebody who's experienced all three, when I first started teaching, I would have some of the worst panic attacks you could imagine, because I actually started doing this because it was something that created a lot of fear doing, and I thought, well, fuck, I might as well work with it. So, and part of the way I would work through each, the panic attacks, the fear, the anxiety, is when that feeling would arise, and it always arises first in the body, feeling in the back of my neck a tingling, there'd be this sort of slight feeling of nauseous, the general feeling of dizziness that would come from the fact that I was hyperventilating and not realizing it. And the moment I would experience that, if I got to this, oh no, not you, not now, you know, not in front of people, then I'd start feeling the mind shrink as it became more and more about fighting these sensations, and it would become more and more uncomfortable. And this create this battle I was fighting would make the sensations even more uncomfortable. And then the thoughts about, oh, I'm going to lose it this time, I'm completely going to fall apart, this is going to be terrible, would just make it an overwhelming experience. And so I started after I went through a retreat many years ago. I started instead just turning towards the feelings and just saying, welcome. It was a desperate move because I tried everything else. I tried any way to get rid of them, any kind of exasperated, you know, I was just trying to push away anxiety in any way I could. But the one thing I had never tried was to simply welcome it. This was the advice of a monk who Ajahn Sucita, who studied for many years with Ajahn Chah. And basically the idea was to envision oneself as like, in our minds, we're all throwing a party. And you've sent out like guest lists on Facebook or whatever, just a huge guest list, and a lot of people are coming that you don't particularly like. But you can't close the door to your party because they'll just bang louder and they'll get indignant. So on the other hand, if there's a guest coming to your party that you don't really want to spend a lot of time with, you just learn how to go into a different room. So what I would do is I would welcome each guest as it arrived, panic, anxiety, fear, but then I would go down into the body and get some distance from all these thoughts and feelings that were coming up, especially the stories in the head. So I'm not any way running away from things. I'm greeting, I'm allowing anything that wants to be around. But I wasn't anymore, on the other hand, sitting right next to it and allowing it to dictate to me what I was going to feel or how I was going to act. I was simply allowing it to be, allowing the sensations to happen. And as much as I could, while I was in the body, breathing and relaxing the areas that I could. The most effective with panic was just slowing down and deepening the breath. Now, when we do this practice of allowing feelings to arise, giving them space, that is, this idea of giving space is really the most important thing we can develop for being with our feelings, being with our emotions. Very often in life, we think that we've only processed a feeling or an emotion when we listen to the stories it's telling us or pay attention to the images that it's throwing up for our attention, the images of the past, the memories, whatever. But actually, giving space means keeping awareness as large as possible so that any guest in our awareness will not take up all of our attention, that there'll be room beyond these visitors, these difficult visitors, for us to contain them. In Zen Buddhism, they call this making the mind a vessel. In the original core teachings of the Buddha, he gave this story where he said that if you pour a spoonful of salt into a glass of water, the glass of water becomes undrinkable because it's too salty. But if you pour a spoonful of salt into a lake, you can still drink from the lake because it's not diluted, the lake. You won't even taste any of the salt. So large is the lake. And it's the same principle with awareness practice, with mindfulness. What we want to do is create an awareness that's so spacious that anything can arise, and the mind won't, what the Buddha called tamayata, collapse around the thought. When we allow the mind to collapse around the thought, we become unaware of all the things that are happening in the body, all the feelings there, and it's just us against this event in our life that we're fighting with. Why did I say this? Why did this person say this to me? How can I undo this? You know, or our fear, you know, what's going to happen to me, how much money am I going to have in the future, or whatever. The mind shrinks, and when the mind shrinks around a thought, we lose. But if we keep our awareness spacious and big and roomy, then we can literally hold anything. We can allow anything to arise and pass. So, how do we do this? And I'll just give a very few brief tips. We learned, there are a few ways that we can give space to feelings. The first is vertically, and I already talked about that, which is when something arises, especially something that's very thought-based, a memory-based, something that's very, an unpleasant experience that we're reliving, find the breath, or find areas in the body that are comfortable. Allow the awareness to move down so that we're no longer just experiencing the body from behind our eyes, like, or that we're perched on our shoulders, but instead we lower into the body. So we're getting some distance from these stories. We're getting some room. When we go into the body, we can relax the breath, relax sensations that go, that react to these stories that try to push them away. Especially, there's often the tightening of the muscles and the arms and the legs. So we can get a lot of space by vertically moving our awareness down and simply allowing thoughts to pass through above. This way, also, the feelings of the body create an anchor to keep us present so that we don't get pulled into all those future projections about how badly life is going to turn out or all the things that we're scared about. Now, another way to get space or room for feelings is to do it what I call horizontally, which is very often in life we are flooding out just looking at objects and searching for things to distract us. And this keeps us in a, we're running away from feelings. But rather than that, when we close our eyes and we just, for example, allow sounds to arise and pass, what happens is the mind naturally becomes wider as it allows all the auditory events to occur. We're using the sounds, again, as an anchor, but we're also allowing any feelings to arise in the body. So obviously this is more effective when sadness or more embodied feelings arise. Another practice that I was taught by Susito is the practice of just feeling the space around the body, or just becoming aware of the outline of the body. So when feelings arise, just simply make sure that we have a sense of what the space feels like around us. Another practice that's really, really useful is when really sad or painful stories come up in the mind as thoughts or obsessive thoughts, things that we're finding passing again and again obsessively through our attention. One thing that really helps is to break it up with a reflection that we know will not cause stress. A reflection, obviously, for example, gratitude lists, things that we're grateful for in our life, things that other people have done for us, times that we've been skillful and helped other people. These are a wonderful way to break up the thoughts. It takes practice to break up self-centered, obsessive thoughts with skillful thoughts, but the Buddha mentioned that. One practice, though, that I do recommend that I've learned from Ajahn Sumedho is the practice of really becoming comfortable in silence. Now, this sounds kind of odd, but very often in life, we only pay attention to the times when the mind's loud, when there's a lot of thoughts. And when the mind is very quiet, we immediately use it to become preoccupied with something external. When the mind's quiet, we say, oh, okay, I'm now going to pick up a task, I'm going to accomplish something, I'm going to go and I'm going to clean up, I'm going to, you know, pay bills, whatever. There's a sense that there's no purpose for those times in life when the mind is quiet. But actually, if we can sit and relax into those times where those spaces between thoughts, we can actually begin to bring that awareness into the times of life when the mind is very loud and very, very busy. We can bring that recollection of silence and peace and calm into other parts of our life. We can extend them. We can luxuriate into them. But if we're constantly running away from the silent moments of the mind, then they will not be there when we need them. So it's really worthwhile to be able to settle into peace without feeling that every moment in life has to be filled up. So just to summarize tonight's talk, the goal for spiritual practice is to give space for feelings to arise and pass. It's just that attention, that awareness, that can heal all these old wounds that we've been suppressing or running from. Our tendency, though, is when we have these kind of uncomfortable, irritating, or just discomfort, is to think there's something wrong with what's going on around us and to want to change the situation. But rather than doing that, we learn to sit with these feelings. We greet them by welcoming them first, rather than immediately adopting an internal posture of go away. I don't want to feel sad right now. I don't want to feel irritated right now. I don't want to feel lonely right now. I don't want to feel bored right now. And then the second part is to make sure that the mind is spacious enough so that anything can arise without completely taking over us and driving us into acting out. And the way we do this is by working with sounds, working with the breath, working with body sensations, working with the sensation of the skin and the room around us, and by learning to extend the times of silence and peace so that we can bring them back via reflection. So I hope there was something there worth thinking about. I thank you for being here. Let me turn this off.